Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, Matt Doyle. It is Monday, October 7th. Doyle, we are starting with a disclaimer. And that disclaimer is this show was built on the tradition that we watch the games. We don't look at the stats. And if you're one of those highlight watching, hot take firing, no nothings, well, we don't got any respect for you. And today I can confidently say I am a know nothing about MLS match day 37. Tommy Scoops, Tom Bogert, that wedding took precedence. The I didn't watch the games.
Yeah. You didn't come home yesterday and plop down in front of the TV for 7 hours and try to catch up on everything?
I did not. There were a number of domestic light lagers consumed. Pilsners? I don't know. Either. Yeah, Pilsners. Thank you. I was feeling a little bit rough. So I coached some children's soccer, which was an absolute joy.
Better than I did. My God.
And then I did watch every single highlight pack on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV with my six-year-old, with Cameron Wiebe, who demands that we watch those every week. So I got the highlights. I got the highlights. And we'll... I don't know. Well, what about you? How are you? Did you survive Sunday?
I survived. I did actually make it to not just the reception, but the after party.
I didn't make it there, no.
Elsewhere in Asbury Park. And, ended up having probably two too many. Made for a tough Saturday night and a tough Sunday commute back to New York City. But like you, I was able to get home. I did not coach any children's soccer. I just watched the highlights and looked at some of the numbers just to get a feel for what happened on the field on Saturday. So, yeah, the disclaimer is we did not watch the full games. We watched just the highlights. So this is a show for the casuals, which means there is no more perfect thing to talk about than our MVP ballots, because God, casuals love the MVP ballot.
Who was your MVP of the Bogert wedding, would you say? Who was the most valuable player in terms of the overall wedding atmosphere? I got to say, whoever made the decision on the formal dinner.
Yeah,
so I'm assuming it's going to be Mrs. Scoops on that front, who really sort of dictated the vibes. The no formal dinner move is a strong move. It just means extended party.
It was one of those things where you go straight from the ceremony and then into the reception. There was a table with a big, because it's New Jersey and Tom's Italian, so a big spread
Gabagool.
Of meats and cheeses and some very nice bread and a Caesar salad. So that was all serve yourself. But then they had the waiters coming around with like little plates of like small foods. Like there was some beef tenderloin skewers and
delicious.
Coconut shrimp. It was all really, really well done. Oh. The other MVP, the band. Like you don't see a ton of live bands at weddings anymore. It tends to just be DJs, but the band killed it. So it was fun.
It had a horn section, a trombone involved. Anytime you get a trombone at a wedding, you're going to have a good time. Danny D hit us up and said, what's the scoop on Tommy Scoops' bachelor party? I believe I was invited to that, but there was never a moment in my mind that I thought I would attend or that I could attend or that I had the stamina to attend. I would not be with you today. You'd be mourning my absence. My wife and children would be very sad. And Woody Wilder in Charlotte said, can you confirm that Tom Bogert did not check in with sources during his wedding day? I cannot confirm. But my expectation is that Tom did not. He seemed to be in his element, having a great time. Yeah. Nobody works the crowd like Tommy Scoops, making sure everybody is happy to be there, knows that he's appreciative. We're just so happy for him, man. It's been, when did we meet Tommy? How many years ago are we talking now?
God, I want to say seven years ago. Yeah.
God, look at what this young man has turned himself into.
I could make public all the DMs, him just like asking to buy me a coffee so that he could get a break and meet people at MLSsoccer.com. I wouldn't do that though. I wouldn't make that embarrassing stuff. Tom just begging. I would never make that public.
Just groveling? Would you classify it as groveling? Please.
Yeah. Yeah, like
connect
really
me with Simon
stuff.
Borg. Yeah. What a you know what? He's really made himself into something in this world. Congratulations, Todd. We were so happy to be there and celebrate with you. In case you were watching the games, or maybe you weren't, in case you missed it, match day 37, the Eastern Conference. 7 teams are now in. There's 2 spots for 4 teams. We have 2 match days remaining. Saturday, October 12th and Sunday, October 13th during the international break. The Crew in New England will play on that Saturday, and Vancouver LAFC will play on the Sunday. Montreal and DC are currently in the 8 and 9 spots on 40 points. Atlanta and Philly are on 37. So Atlanta and Philly both need to win on decision day, and then they would need Montreal and DC to lose and the tiebreakers to go their way. So that's what we're playing for there. The top 3 are set. Of course, that's Miami, the Shield winners, who won again last second against Toronto to end their season and now could get the points record against New England on decision day. Orlando and New York City are fighting for the 4 spot. Orlando on 52 points, New York City on 50. Orlando get Atlanta at home on decision day, and New York City will be at Montreal as they fight for that 4 spot. Out in the Western Conference, all 9 teams are set. We knew that. It's just about seeding. That has come into focus after this match day 37. The Galaxy are your top seed with home field advantage throughout the playoffs with 1 more point. They're at Houston decision day, and Houston Dynamo have historically been just a rollover opponent for the Galaxy on decision day, Doyle. So there should be nothing to worry about there. Meanwhile, LAFC would need to win 2 games to tie and go to top seed. They will, however, LAFC get a home field advantage spot. So will Seattle and RSL. All of them will be a top 4 seed, but seeding is up for grabs there. Vancouver, disaster for them down the stretch here. They're the only clubs, right? Them and Minnesota are the only clubs that could go in or out of the wild card game because the Portland Timbers are stuck there. Vancouver have a big 2 games down the stretch to try to get out of that wild card spot. They currently occupy in the 8th spot. And the Timbers are the Timbers. And so they drew 0-0 home against Dallas and will certainly play in the wild card. All right. If the Audi 2024 MLS Cup playoffs started today, Doyle, we have the current bracket. I want you to tell me who you would want to win the wild card matches just for maximum enjoyment, content, drama, etc. Right now, it would be Vancouver, Portland in the West and DC, Montreal in the East. Between Vancouver and Portland to play the LA Galaxy, who would you send on just for fun?
I think Portland, because we've seen these teams play a bunch of high scoring games this year. There was a 4-2 just a couple of weeks ago. And Evander is, you know, like he's been kind of in the MVP race for most of the second half of the season. I don't think he's going to win it. I doubt he'll get many votes, but like he has played that well. So just there's just a little more juice to that one. No offense to the Caps, but they made a couple of additions in the summer that haven't really worked out. If anything, they're playing worse than they were a couple of weeks ago. And DC. DC has just been a better team than Montreal for most of the season. And in Christian Benteke, they have a guy like Evander who is worthy of being in the MVP discussion. And Montreal don't really have that. And plus, it would be fun just stylistically to see Miami try to deal with Christian Benteke.
I'm with you on that one. I'll take the Timbers. The one caveat is that, you know, you gave Evander the credit, which he deserves in the MVP race. Ryan Gauld, probably a guy that doesn't give as much, you know, credit as he deserves, given the number he's put up this year. I think 15 assists so far when they're at their best. Ryan Gauld did his best, but yeah, I'll take the Timbers too. And then I'm torn, man. It's either Benteke trying to knock off Suarez and Messi and Busquets and Alba and all of the above, or it's Joseph Martinez returning with a plucky Montreal side to Miami. I don't know which one is more enjoyable. I think we win on both instances.
I think you're right, but what elevates the DC matchup for me is the stylistic difference. Styles make fights, and DC play a different brand of soccer than Montreal, different brand than Miami, different brand really than almost anybody in the league at this point, and it's almost all because of Benteke. It's all because of his ability to dominate in the air like nobody we've ever seen in this league before, and that forces teams to adjust in a way that I think makes them uncomfortable. And that's literally the first punch thrown in this potential matchup. It's like you're making the number one seed, you're making the Supporters Shield winner adjust to how you're playing the game. And as fun as Montreal have been over the past few weeks, I don't think they would do that.
3.5 That's the over-under on yellow cards for Tomas Aviles in a three-game series against DC United against Benteke. Oh, I completely agree with you. The moments that are the most impressive to me have been Benteke and his effect, his gravity on games, are not actually the moments where he gets his head on it or he's the guy dunking at the back post or, you know, he is the focal point. It's the moments where, sort of like the Pirani, was it the game winner? I think it was the game winner against Nashville, where Benteke just takes two more steps in a certain direction and all the defenders around him just instinctively take two more steps with him. It's like, okay, well, we know who the focal point is. We know who we have to stay with. Like, we'll let Gabriel Pirani beat us. We'll let Cudi Pietro beat us. We'll let Jared Stroud beat us. Just don't let Benteke beat us. And that opens up that extra half second, two steps, whatever it might be for the players around him. Also, how delightful would it be if a DC team coached by Troy Lesane with attackers like Jared Stroud and Ted Cudi Pietro and Dom Baji, Aaron Herrera, Santos on the other side, beats this Messi team? That would be pure MLS. A lot of endorphins for me on that front. All right, how about the other matchups? Let's just draft them quickly. What you think currently would be the best of the best? You get first pick. What would you take if the playoffs started today?
Just in terms of entertainment value over the course of a series?
What you want to watch, what you would like, hey, I'm going to sit down and watch this match. This will be on the big TV. If they're all at the same time, this one's on the big one.
4-5 in the East. Orlando have been one of the very best teams in the league since midseason. We've beaten it to death. Just how Martin Ojeda as the number 10 has changed that team. And suddenly, NYCFC are good and fun. And in Alonso Martinez, they have a number 9 whose goal scoring I think is going to hold up. I think this is going to continue to translate year after year after year. I think that's going to be a really good series if this ends up being the 4-5. And there's just a little bit of history with these teams as well, both in the playoffs and because they were expansion teams together almost a decade ago.
I'm a little bit torn on history as well. I'm thinking back to a Crew Red Bull series with Greg Berhalter. That was pretty interesting, but I'm going to take the 4-5 in the West because RSL Houston have a bunch of high leverage moments recently, and it's been I think the Dynamo have really been the ones that have stood up in those big moments.
Especially last year's Open Cup when Brian Vera lost his mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a couple. I think Leagues Cup was one of those moments. Mm-hmm. They had a big matchup recently that was good, and I love the way Houston play, and I think RSL play really attractive soccer, and they seem to be maybe starting to find little pieces of that to get back to. All right, next pick. You've got an Eastern Conference matchup. You stay in the East, you go to the West.
I'm going to the West. 2-7. The LAFC versus Minnesota series, I think, is low-key one to keep an eye on if this is how it ends up shaking out. I just love the way Minnesota have been playing the past few months. They have one of, if not the hottest striker in the league, in Kelvin Yeboah. I think the way that Eric Ramsey is now using his fullbacks, one to sort of pinch inside and make it hard to counterattack and fill in those half spaces, I think that potentially a little bit of a difficult problem to solve for an LAFC team that has been much better the past couple of weeks, but still aren't really using the ball the way they were 5 months ago when they were at their very best.
I'm going to go back across. This is what I would call the Who the Hell Knows series if the playoffs started today. FC Cincinnati, FC Charlotte FC. I don't know where to put the FC on half these teams. Two, I don't know who Cincinnati is right now. Like, they're not the defensive juggernaut they were. They're really over-reliant on Lucho and Orochano to produce from an attacking sense. There's a real question mark as to which forwards are going to be in the game and which forwards other than Kubo, or if Kubo, are going to perform in any given moment. There's just a big question mark, and they don't have that dominant home form. So 2 out of 3 home games, it's not as valuable as it might be for others, in particular because Charlotte played them super tough earlier in the year, I believe, in Cincy. And now Charlotte might be a decent attacking team, but they might not be a good defensive team. I just don't know what I would get out of this series other than I would probably get Pat Ajimon for at least, I don't know, 90 minutes combined if he can't start because of that dislocated toe. But I know I would enjoy it.
Is Pat Ajimon the best forward in this series?
Pat Ajimon is the forward in this series most likely to make to score a goal. He's the best. He's the best forward in the series. On his own merits.
He's the best forward in the series.
Okay, we'll get to him in just a little bit. Take your next pick.
Columbus Red Bulls, and I'm picking it because I have skin in the game. I've said Columbus are the best MLS team that I've ever seen play, and if they win MLS Cup 1 year and Leagues Cup the next year, that's not enough. But if they go back-to-back in MLS Cups and win Leagues Cup in between and make a run to the CONCACAF Champions Cup semifinal, then it's like, or final, then, okay, they've probably done enough, and we could talk about it. And, like, somebody's going to come in for Cucho. Someone's going to come in for Wilfred Nancy. I'm not sure how long these guys are going to be in MLS. So that alone makes this a must-watch series for me. Like, every single Columbus Crew game for the rest of the year, however many that may be, is a must-watch series. And the Red Bulls, the Red Bulls.
Yeah, if you couldn't see that, which you can, it's a podcast. Big shoulder shrug there from Doyle as he tried to just tell you who the Red Bulls are. Now, the flip side is the Red Bulls are direct, Doyle, and the Crew might be a little vulnerable from some direct play. Over the top to the last man, well, let's see what can happen. Anything could happen. Could be a goal, could be into Rosie. Also, the Red Bulls are just fun to watch in the playoffs because they invent ways to go down, but wrap swinging. And that leaves me with the Sounders and the Rapids, who played to a 1-0 game this weekend. I'm not so sure that particular series has aesthetic beauty written all over it. But either way, if the playoffs started today, of course they don't. We will see what these matchups are at the end of decision day and get you ready. In the meantime, what's the best thing you saw on the highlights from match day 37, Doyle?
It was Diego Luna with a banger to give RSL the 1-0 win at San Jose. It had a lot of the hallmarks of early season RSL. It was like sort of a controlled semi-break, and then there was some positional interplay among the front line. Chicho was out on the right wing with Luna sort of operating almost in a false nine space underneath the two center backs. We haven't seen a lot of that from RSL over the past couple of months. It's Luna's second goal in four games now after he had none since early July. He also hasn't still picked up an assist since early July, but this gave me at least a little spark of hope that RSL can get right on decision day and then be a threat in the postseason. I haven't felt that way about them. It's been months. So
it has. There's been a lot of blips. From them. A lot of games where early on in the season, I didn't ever feel like we had moments where it was just like, yeah, you just didn't show up. Or not only did you not show up, all of the tenets of the game model were not there. Okay, well, if those two things weren't there, at least you fought, right? And they hadn't fought. And that was something that they're trying to add back to their game. So Pablo Mascherini getting a big time win and a big goal for Diego Luna. By the way, we had Logan Phillips hit us up and say, did you see Diego Luna wearing a Mexican flag during the walkout and national anthem for the RSL Timbers match recently? Was it the Timbers match or was it the San Jose match? Maybe Logan Phillips is confused, but this did indeed happen at some point here. And it seems like Diego Luna is very open to a call up from Mexico.
He should be. He should be. I thought the U.S. Olympic team did well, but I thought they would have benefited from having Diego Luna there. And we all know that Mexico aren't in the greatest shape right now with their player pool. I think, if you're him, you absolutely have to listen for that call up kind of hope it comes.
Best thing I saw. Patrick Agyeman, baby, off the bench. Let him cook. Just let him cook, Dean. And right now it's working off the bench. I hope perhaps playoff time, his foot will be ready for him to play 90 minutes or at least something like that. He puts defenders in a blender, Doyle. And if you go look at the underlying stats, like compared to other forwards, his take-ons won and attempted are up at the very, very top of it. It's the legs. Like, I know he wants to go left, but he'll go right too. I just can't predict where he's going. And sometimes I'm not so sure that Agyeman knows exactly where he's going until the moment he just starts chucking step overs and his legs look like they're flailing everywhere. And then all of a sudden he's by you and then he's in a finishing position and you're thinking, okay, early season 2024 Pat Agyeman doesn't finish this or makes the wrong choice. Late season Pat Agyeman scoops it over the goalkeeper like it's nothing and then gritties on them to seal a 2-0 win for Charlotte. Like, This dude is built different. One goal in 182 minutes last year. He's up to 9 goals, 5 assists this year. This is the leap. Like, yeah, this is the beginning of the leap. We're seeing in scattershot, but more consistently recently, what the leap could look like for Pat Aujamon.
One point I want to make before we talk philosophically about this, when he's doing those stepovers, when he's in those 1v1 situations with center backs or sometimes fullbacks, first of all, that is part of Charlotte's game model, right? They actively try to get him into those situations. Second of all, most forwards, when they feel contact in that situation, get worse. But he actually gets better because he's so strong. He's able to sort of knock guys off balance and create a little bit of separation. And as soon as he has that separation, he's going to pull it back to his left foot. And, you know, as you said earlier in the season, that was just a shot. It wasn't a goal. Now those are turning into goals. He has been he's been excellent. Like when I was saying before, who's the best forward in a potential Charlotte-Cincinnati playoff matchup? I'm not kidding when I say it's Pat Aujamon. Like he brings a lot of stuff to the table, and his upside, like I think Charlotte would be out of their minds to, you know, replace Karol Swiderski if they part ways with him this winter, to replace him with another DP number 9. I think that they should understand that it's found money with Pat Aujamon, that this should be his spot for the next half decade.
I think this or longer. Found money for Pat as well very soon, this offseason, or perhaps even before that. Like, there's been some contract extensions already announced in Charlotte. Like they gotta pay Pat Aujamon his money. And I think that's going to happen. He's earned it. Now, speaking of the philosophical side, like I think about this one and I think about, you know, when you said, okay, Cincinnati or Charlotte, who has the better forward? Okay, well, if Brandon Vasquez was around, Vasquez would be in that argument. And Vasquez is sort of in the same mold as Aujamon in a way of like guy who had to develop, had to wait for his opportunity, got it, seized it. Now look where he is. And we were thinking about this in the pre-show meeting, and maybe it's the Brian White effect. Maybe you can go back even further because there are so many, you know, from the super draft, you know, domestic goal scorers that have popped up in this league. I mean, Kai Kamara is one of the ones that's still doing it right now that kind of followed this trajectory in a way. And then we looked around the league and we're like, okay, well, it's Pat Aujamon, but it's Simon Betcher who had a huge weekend. It's Tani Olashehi, whose production has slowed down, but still obviously has that talent and is getting called into Canada. It's Alonso Martinez, who took a not so, you know, not the same path. He's not a super draft guy, but was completely unheralded. It is now this, you know, in the golden boot race, at least by proxy, number 9. It's Duncan McGuire. It's Logan Farrington. It's all these guys who came in with very little hype or came in via the super draft and was like, yeah, well, maybe TBD, and then became not just useful MLS players. Like, yeah, you could start that guy for a successful team, MLS players.
Yeah. And I think that most of these guys are going to be starters next year, though all of them are going to have to continue to fight for it.
Well, not Farrington, right? Like, but play significant minutes.
Yeah. Yep. Though, if Jesus Ferreira gets sold, and
that's true, they want to go two forwards. Yeah.
You know, and Logan Farrington has. I love Bernie Kamungo. Logan Farrington has been a better soccer player than Bernard Kamungo this year.
He lapped him this year.
Yeah.
He took those minutes.
If Jesus Ferreira is sold this offseason, and whether it's Peter Luxon or maybe Eric Quill or whoever ends up as a head coach of FC Dallas, like just watching Logan Farrington play, you're probably thinking, well, we have to figure out how to get this guy on the field at the same time as Petter Musa. And it's the same thing with Simon Betcher. Like I straight up think that St. Louis are better with Simon Betcher as their number 9 than they have been with Klaus. And Tani Olashehi, I mean, bad luck for him that Minnesota went out and they got Kelvin Yeboah, who has been awesome. But Tani Olashehi was awesome before he left for Copa America duty with Canada. And if you're a team like, I mean, Toronto, right? Don't you, part of your offseason rebuild, because there is going to be a rebuild in Toronto, like, you have to call up Khaled Al-Ahmad and say, all right, what does it take to get a deal done for Tani Olashehi, who is a Canadian international, who is clearly starting caliber in this league, but who is only going to be used henceforth as a super sub at best behind Kelvin Yeboah. So all of this is in play, and it's made me think about roster building in MLS. And like, I would have real trouble right now going out and spending DP money on a number nine. I just think creating the sort of playmaking environment around those guys is so much more important. So much more important. And I think of it like we're seeing it in LA with the Galaxy, where they added Gabriel Peck and Joseph Painsel, and obviously still had Ricky Pugin. Suddenly Dejan Jovalic is not just living up to, but surpassing expectations. He's not a DP. And you go on down the list, you know, Jordan Morris finally being moved to the number nine, and suddenly the Sounders are off and running since that adjustment was made. So I don't know. Like, we need to see what happens in the postseason, right? Because, like, traditionally, it's the teams with the best number nines that tend to raise MLS Cup. We saw that last year with Cucho leading the way for Columbus. But it's... I just think we're getting to the point now where we're getting like a preponderance of evidence that you can find guys who can do this job at a high level from the super draft or from the scrap heap in Europe, which is what Alonso Martinez was, or, you know, on a U22 deal like Dejan Jovalic or Ramiro and Enrique, and that you don't have to spend your biggest chip at that spot. And that it might actually create a better team if you go spend elsewhere in the midfield or on the wings. It's something I'm going to keep an eye on down, you know, decision day and then into the playoffs.
Hello. This is Jason Hernandez calling Khalid El Ahmad. We would like Tani Olesheyi. Yeah, this is Khalid El Ahmad. Can I interest you in a Temu Pukki? Would you like a Temu Pukki? Now, Pukki's contract's up in June 2025. But if you're Minnesota, I mean, you're just looking at this roster. You're looking at the way that Eric Ramsey wants to play. Why would you give up Olesheyi? You know what I mean? Like, why would you? Like, what's the opportunity cost?
Why would you? And the answer is for $1.5 million of allocation cash. Even still, right?
I mean, can you try to replace Olesheyi? Like, don't you want to have Yeboah and Olesheyi as your 1-2?
Isn't that the point of this segment? Is that if you have a really functional attack,
that's what I'm saying,
then you can actually go into the super draft or hopefully at some point through your academy and replace that guy?
I don't think it's a home run. I don't think that there's a guarantee that that guy's there for you. I think it's more like you need to, in the super draft, be very mindful of what the ceiling could be with certain positions and certain profiles. And if you see a guy like that, given what super draft picks are worth, go trade up to be the 7 pick, the 5 pick, the 3 pick, whatever it is, to go get the next Pat Ajuman or the Olesheyi. And look, there's no guarantee that you're going to get that guy. You know, but if you trade up for Duncan McGuire, there's a chance. And then that value just so far outstrips your super draft pick or whatever the return was going to be otherwise. Because, you know, the odds are not with you in the super draft, even though it's a ton of talent. I mean, I would just have a hard time, just like Orlando City, for instance, in letting that guy go and saying, okay, well, we'll let you go, Duncan McGuire. What's the replacement value for you? I think you just got to re-sign him and say, we want to be too deep at forward and we still have a DP spot open, so we go get Pereira. Or we're able to pay Robin Ludd. I don't know. We'll see how these teams approach it. But I will just say, Benteke, Cucho, who was a nine when he was brought in, Arango... You know, there are guys, there are Petar Musa, there are guys in here that have really produced the nine spot, but it's going to be a big question mark for teams as they roster build going forward. I do want to throw out one other thing that's best thing I saw. Did you see the goal that Aaron Long scored?
I did, but it's escaping my memory. I'm going to go back and
beautiful,
watch the clip
beautiful
right
center
now.
Back finish that doesn't look like a center back finish. I mean, he looks like a top tier winger, number 10. Number nine in this league, puts his head down, curls it to the back post over Tim Melia, and then he's just laughing to himself. His entire team is loving it, none more so than the other defenders. It was a really fun moment for LAFC and Aaron Long. And Anders, I don't know if you have this queued up, but the best thing that I heard was by far...
Oh, it was the Piatti goal.
Yes.
It was the Piatti goal, yeah.
It was wonderful. John Herdman sadly explaining the state of Lorenzo Insigne on the final day of the MLS regular season for Toronto FC.
Yeah, I mean, you could see he didn't have much in him. I think you managed to get Messi's shirt, though. But, yeah.
The yeah at the end, and you couldn't see it because, again, this is a podcast, but, like, the emptiness in John's eyes after he said yeah and just trailed off Doyle.
Well, did you see the precursor to that was before the game, I think in the build-up, so, like, late last week, John Herdman had been asked by one of the local media there, and there's a lot of local media in Toronto. They do a very good job. Was asked about which players do you think are going to get Messi's shirt? And John Herdman said something to the effect of, I think that we're fighting for our lives. And I think it would be embarrassing for our players to try to queue up and go out of their way to get Messi's shirt. Adds a little bit of flavor to that post game, but yeah.
Hey, I feel like we all saw this coming with Toronto.
Yeah.
With no decision day game, with the complete and utter negative momentum and negative vibes surrounding the club, and in particular single player out, just the entire club, that they would be lame ducks on decision day. Their season is over. They didn't win the Canadian championship. It all just sort of fell apart. All right, let's get to that MVP vote and really service the casuals here, Doyle. By the time you're listening to this, award nominees are out. So we know who's up for all the different awards in Major League Soccer. We'll do a complete breakdown of who we would vote for. But let's stick at MVP here. Who you got? Who's number one? Who are you voting for right now, and what could change it?
I think I have Cucho at number one.
That didn't sound as strong as I imagined it might have.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. There's no obvious answer on Miami. I could make the nerd argument for Busquets because he's played the most minutes, and their record when he plays in central midfield is impeccable. I could make the argument for Messi, who, to be clear, is going to win it because his name is going to show up on the ballot and all the players, I said, are going to vote for him. And he's
people were yelling at us in the mentions about, talk about this change in the requirements to be a part of the ballot. Messi would have been on the ballot regardless, like under the previous rules.
Yep.
So you're just searching for something to be upset about there. What it would have taken for you to vote Messi, since we do think, and I agree with you, I think the most likely outcome here is that Lionel Messi is your 2024 Landon Donovan MLS MVP. What would it have taken for you to put Messi there? Because on production, he's produced, and in many fewer minutes, which I guess then is to his detriment and why we're not putting him there. Because I'm not putting him there either. I'm a Cucho guy as well.
Yeah. 500 more minutes? You know, is 2,000 minutes a reasonable cutoff line for appearances or for total time on the field? And if Miami's record was significantly different with and without Messi, that would be a pretty good argument.
But compelling.
Even this weekend, he didn't start. They still won. Now they didn't get the goal until the 92nd minute, and he was on the field. But I don't know. We've done this one to death. It feels like I'm not going to vote for him. We know how our guy Sasha Kljestan feels, and I think he was right to say what he said. But it's not going to matter. Messi's going to win. My vote is going to be for Cucho. 19 goals, 13 assists. He's done it while playing four different competitions and playing
three different positions that you would argue. I mean, you could argue the two tens underneath the Columbus nine are one and the same, just sort of different roles, but it's all interchangeable. I'm with you. I think it's not just his impact as a goal scorer, which has been prodigious and clutch. It's his impact in every part of the game for the Crew. He is by far the best player for what is, in my opinion, I still think the best soccer team overall, plays the best soccer in the league, and has had the biggest sort of burden to carry in terms of additional games, additional big moments, on-field stress throughout the season, and who has performed the best in all those moments. So I will freely admit in voting for Cucho that I'm not exclusively basing it on MLS play.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel bad about that at all. I don't. You know, the best teams play the most games and the biggest games, and Cucho has been the constant for the Crew, as has Diego Rossi, but Cucho has been a constant for the Crew and a difference maker who stood up in the biggest moments that he had to. I just think overall the best player, the best MLS player in 2024, full resume from start to finish, has been Cucho Hernandez. And that's why I'd say he's going to be the one for me.
Does Lucho Acosta still have an argument for most valuable?
Yeah, but I get frustrated with, I understand the argument. I get frustrated when we over-index on valuable. I'm not completely certain that that's what the award is supposed to really be of like, well, what if he wasn't there?
It's in the title.
But I don't know, man. Mine is best player.
If you were king, of MLS, would you change the name of the award to Player of the Year?
Yes.
Okay.
Just to avoid confusion. Just to avoid people being like, oh, but you know, like
just to avoid people like me being semantic deep.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
Exactly. And so Lucho would be there for that, and Benteke should be there for that. In fact, I would have Benteke as a finalist right now in my top three. And I know Brad O'Leary Phillips would be like, well, goal scorers don't get it. And I would argue that Benteke is a different type of goal scorer in MLS and for this DC team, and that, yes, his goals lead the league. But just like a Lucho or just like a Cucho or an Evander or a Lionel Messi or a Ricky Puig or on down the list of guys, you know, the game model revolves around him in so many ways. Like DC can't just not score without Benteke, but their entire way of playing is through him. It's just not the same as a number 10. So I would put him there as well. I was arguing earlier in our pre-show, and I may or may not have been shamed for it, that Ricky Puig might have an argument here. And or this guy on Twitter hit us up. I can't say the name. It's O-R-A-Y-M-W. That is unpronounceable. Says that I realize Ricky's unlikely to win, but y'all should talk about his case for MVP, and you ethered me. You dug a hole and buried me in it, and then 2 feet tamped it down.
The Galaxy are 3-1-1 in the five games they've played without Ricky this year. Three of the five games were against playoff teams. Three of the five were on the road. The only one they lost was against St. Louis about a month ago, and that was the one game they had with Marco Reus playing as the number 10. So it's not like they just have such a great proven world-class option behind Ricky Puig. No, when Diego Fagundes was playing number 10 instead of Ricky Puig, they were really, really good. Remember the whole thing with Sasha talking about it on 360 that Ricky started tweeting about? And it's because the Galaxy kept that structure better without Ricky Puig, and it ended up putting more on the shoulders of the team's actual MVP, which is Gabriel Peck. Gabriel Peck leads the Galaxy in goals. He leads them in primary assists. And you said it on the pre-show meeting, Weeby. You said like it was when Gabriel Peck settled in on that right side that the Galaxy went up a level. He's got 29 goal contributions. He is the team leader in something called XG sequence. And what that is a measure of how many expected goals total are generated from passing sequences in which you have a touch. You know, you carry the ball 5 yards or you hit a telling pass. And so you add that on top of him being the team leader in both expected goals and expected assists and central to everything they do in the attack. Ricky Puig is a great player. He's one of my half dozen favorite players in the league to watch. I think he's been exceptional the past couple of weeks. I still don't think that he's the MVP of that Galaxy team. I don't think he is the most irreplaceable player on that Galaxy team. I think it's Gabriel Peck.
How about Ricky for Entertainer of the Year?
Hell yeah.
Let's go.
Ricky for personality? Like, I wish every player in this league took stuff as personally as Ricky did and were willing to talk about it the way Ricky does. I think it makes it all so much more interesting, so much more fun. And he's an awesome player. Like, don't get me wrong. He is one of the very best players in the league. So hopefully he hears this little rant and he calls me a dumbass and he scores a couple of goals and he, you know, makes something of it, because that's just good entertainment.
If he does, then he's going to be the entertainer and he's going to be the reply guy of the year.
Oh, yeah.
He probably has a reply guy locked up.
Yeah, he's got that one locked up. Yeah.
Now, who would be your number 10 of the year? Because we sort of glossed over Lucho and Evander, and I guess even Messi, you could kind of count in that category. Like, if we're saying Cucho for us is the MVP, who would be the top number 10 for you?
It's still Lucho. But that top group with him, Evander, Ricky, and then, you know, Messi is Messi. If Messi played 500 more minutes, Messi would be the winner for all of this.
I mean, it's been a great year for the 10, by the way. And guys that you don't think of, throw Albert Rusnak in there. He's got 10 and 15.
How about Marcel Hartl since he arrived? Marcel Hartl's got 2 and 7 in about 600 minutes. He's been awesome.
Ryan Gaul, that's 9 and 15. Do we count Robin Lutt in there? I mean, he's played all over the place, but he's got 6 and 15. Even Santi Moreno, if you want to count him as sort of a winger that comes inside, there's been a lot of just really, really good performances in MLS. But let us know. MVP vote is about to happen. People are going to have to mull where they're going. And as Doyle said, we think that many will go for Lionel Messi. All right, let's train our eyes on the Eastern Conference and what there is to play for on Decision Day on the 19th of October. DC in 8th. Big-time result for them this weekend. Montreal in 9th. 40 points as well. Toronto are in 10th, but they're eliminated. Then Philadelphia and Atlanta are there as well, Doyle. What do you think? Philadelphia on decision day, Cincinnati comes to town. That's a very interesting matchup given all the connections between the club. DC, Charlotte comes to town. Montreal also at home. They have New York City. And then Atlanta playing in Orlando for their playoff lives. Do you feel like it's just going to hold that DC and Montreal with home games against, I wouldn't say winnable, they're two very good teams in New York City and Charlotte. You feel like they'll hold out, or do Philly or Atlanta have a chance to jump up and make the tiebreakers work?
Man, Philly and Atlanta have a chance. And Philly, given their, well, both teams have significantly better goal differential than DC and Montreal. I expect the Union to figure out a way to win against Cincinnati. Cincinnati have been struggling. I don't know if I expect either or both of DC and Montreal to lose. I just, like, they're just, for the most part, finding a way to get points. It's tough. What do you think?
They would both have to lose. So let's just make that clear to people that are wondering about the scenarios. There's
they
no
wouldn't
doubt
both have to. No. They wouldn't have to lose. No,
well, if Montreal, to drop out. Each of them. Yeah.
Okay. So, or sorry.
Yeah. To for them not to get in, they both, right, the result that would put them into jeopardy is losing.
Yeah.
If they draw, they're in.
Yeah. Any draw or win, obviously, and they're in. Yeah.
Big wins over the course of this week.
But
as
you
well,
dodged. Above. You dodged the question.
What? Who? Huh? I think that Montreal are probably in the bigger trouble.
Yep.
Between the two, just as far as the schedule goes. So I think Montreal might be up against it. New York City's got plenty to play for because they need to get a win to jump over Orlando. Charlotte has a little bit less to play for. And I think right now Charlotte's tendency would be to get into the sort of game that DC can win, which is just kind of a crazy one. And a little bit susceptible right now to that direct play. I think one will drop, one will stay, and I think the Philadelphia Union jump into the playoffs. And I can see Anders in the chat right now saying, what is wrong with you? Stop voting the Union when you know that they're not going to show up for you, but we shall see. Let's have some questions. June says, DC's improbable return to the playoffs has to be talked about. Is Troy just really good at late season pushes? What have you made of DC's run into this position?
I said for most of the year that they were playing better ball than their records indicate. They've had not great goalkeeping for most of the year. They have a center back core that I'm not sure there are many starting caliber players in that group. And it showed. It showed in the goals that they gave up for most of the season, right up until mid-July. And now they're, 6-2-2 in their last 10 games in the league? And it's not like you know, it's not like they've suddenly become a defensive juggernaut. It's the fact that they are getting answers from guys beside Christian Benteke. He's still kept up his end of the bargain, both in terms of goal scoring and setting up goals and being their plan A, plan B, plan C in terms of how to get the ball into the final third. Like, he has not slowed down at all, but suddenly they're getting answers from guys like Gabriel Pirani, and Ted Kuti-Pietro has been better. And we saw Pedro Santos this weekend. That wasn't there for most of the first 5 months of the season. And I don't know if it's because of the formational changes that Troy Lussain has sort of instituted. I don't know if it's just a variance, or I don't know if it's just desperation. Maybe he had a team meeting in early July and said, look, here is the standard we need to play at for the rest of the year if we're even going to sniff the wildcard games. And whatever it was, it has worked. But this is still a team that can give up 4 goals when they should have conceded 1. And that is the worry going into this weekend and then potentially into the playoffs.
How far can Charlotte go in the playoffs, since we're talking, you know, matchups between these teams, and obviously Charlotte goes to DC. We've got some Charlotte folks that want to know what's the ceiling here.
What is their first round? Their first round right now would be
Cincinnati. And I actually think
Cincinnati, of the
top 4 teams in the East, Cincinnati is probably the one that you want right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that, though. Maybe things change as they get a little bit of rest over the next couple of weeks ahead of decision day. They can win that series. I think it's less than a coin flip, right? I think I would put it at 60-40 Cincinnati. So they'd be underdogs, but not like colossal underdogs. Then they would end up having to go to Columbus, almost certainly to Columbus. I don't think they win that game. I don't, you know, that's a 1-in-10 shot.
I think conference semis that would be a very, very good run for them to win a playoff series. And to have a first ever home playoff game. I mean, just the fact that they will get that is a huge step forward. But I was in Charlotte like maybe 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. I don't know. Life just blends together. And they said, look, we think we can make a run to cup. So belief is the first step. How about Christian Kolina for MVP? We had the same guy hitting us up about that. Without him, he says Charlotte would be sweeping the basement. And to that, I say no.
Yeah, that's all we need to say on that. Kalina's been good. We'll talk about him in goalkeeper of the year, but no, he's not an MVP. No.
Corey Clayton says he's getting 2021 vibes from New York City, especially with the late season win streak. Could they be giant killers?
No. They could win their first round series, and they could get, you know, fortunate in a one off against anybody. But this is not like 2021. That 2021 team was the best team in MLS that year. And I know the Revs set the single season points record, but we saw in the playoffs the gap between them and NYCFC. That NYCFC team on both sides of the ball was a cut above what this group has been, even when they've played well this year. But no, like in that 4-5, like that 4-5 series, there's a reason I drafted it first. Like, they could go hammer and tongs on Orlando City. It wouldn't shock me at all if they won that one. Could they then upset Miami in Miami? Yeah, it could happen. But then go to Columbus and beat Columbus. And like, I can't see them doing that 2 games in a row.
Yeah, navigate, especially out of the 5 seed, if they're going to go on the road the rest of the way, assuming the seeding holds up and, you know, top seeds win, of which 7 of 8 did last year in the first round. I agree with you. This kind of leads us to a natural conversation here, which is something I was asked on SiriusXM with Dunny and Max Bredos the other day, which is who can realistically win MLS Cup? Somebody on Twitter hit me up and said the top 4 in each conference are mostly set. No MLS seed lower than 4 has won the MLS Cup since 2010. Only 2 of the finals have been contested by a 5 seed. Can we get some preliminary discussion on those teams versus each other? And I actually want to take that. And in response to what Sasha said about the Supporters Shield, Doyle, which is that when's the last time you said so-and-so team was lucky to win it? I would apply that to MLS Cup as well. I don't think you're going to get lucky to win it. In fact, to get through a bracket like this against teams of the quality that we have in MLS and players and coaches of the quality that we have in this era of the league, you can't be lucky. It's just not possible, especially with the three-game series. And then if you're a lower seed going on the road. So back to the original question, how many teams can realistically win MLS Cup in your opinion?
I think it's four at this point, and it's the top two in each conference.
Yeah. You wouldn't put, for instance, the Seattle Sounders in that conversation.
I think they lack that one more piece of top-end talent. And we've said all year, in theory, it's Pedro de la Vega. In practice, it hasn't been Pedro de la Vega. You know, and Cincinnati, they have a lot of equity with us. We love that team. But their best forward is Yu Yakubo.
This is not their moment, right? I mean, just the center back injuries alone have been disastrous, and they just don't feel like they have the rhythm.
Yep.
I guess they could discover that in the playoffs, and a three-game series could be very good for discovering rhythm and getting the sort of reps and you know, moments that a team needs to sort of build on to push through. And they have been very good on the road, so maybe they can do it on the road. Are you concerned at all about the Crew right now?
No. No, they've just played a million games. They've played more games against good teams than anybody. I don't think they struggle with direct play. I don't think that's a real thing. A team that's given up 36 goals in 33 games, they're not struggling with anything defensively. I have no worries about the Columbus Crew, especially because most of their guys are going to get rest over the international date. You know, Kucha's going to go with Colombia, but he's not going to play more than 20 minutes. Even if he gets off the bench, it won't be for long. Diego Rossi doesn't play for Uruguay. Christian Ramirez, Darlington Nagbe. Like, these guys are going to have their legs under them. So, no, I am not concerned about Columbus.
Seems like Steven Moreira is a little bit hurt, too. Maybe that'll keep him from going on international break. We'll see, because that tends to be one that really takes it out of you as well, those long, long trips.
So let me turn it back to the original question. How many teams have a chance? You put Seattle in that group. Like, I think we can all agree that there's, like, A-tier favorites, which are probably... Well, I would struggle to put Galaxy at the same level as LAFC, Miami, or Columbus. But for the sake of the bit, we'll say Galaxy are in that group. Are Seattle in that group as well? Or
no.
Are they a level
down? So no, it's a level down.
So who else is in Seattle's group?
Seattle, Orlando, and I think FC Cincinnati, based on Lucho and the possibility with rest that Awazium is back and you're playing Awazium, Miles Robinson, and probably Ian Murphy. And Kubo can be a difference maker, even though he's not one that you want to rely on. We know Orochano absolutely can be that guy. And if Cincinnati rediscover just a little bit, just even the tiniest bit of defensive form, and Lucho gets back to being some semblance of MVP Lucho, they can make a run, especially because they're the best road team in the league. But I think there's a lot of ifs there. There's a lot of ifs with Seattle. There's I think actually perhaps right now less ifs with Orlando City. It's just they haven't done it against the best teams. That would be my next tier down. It would be four and then three, and then it would be crapshoot below that.
NYCFC is not in that second tier?
Nah, too young. Too young, going to have to go on the road, paths too hard. These last couple of games have been nice, but there was a nine-game run before that where they didn't get it done.
Let me argue, well... I will argue that they learned from the nine-game run, right? They had every chance to just flush their season into the toilet, and they found a way not to do that. Second of all, Maxi Morales, James Sands, Keaton Parks, that is the same central midfield as 2021. That is the same group of guys who actually won this thing 3 years ago. And I know they're young at other spots, but they're not young in central defense.
Do they get to still play at Red Bull Arena? Do the Yankees go on a long run in the playoffs? I hope not. I hope the Royals knock them out. No, I'm just kidding. Seems like they enjoy Red Bull Arena, at least results-wise right now. Knocked off Nashville there on Sunday. All right, let's get to the end of the show here. Why don't we? Josh Wolf, I forgot to mention this. It's felt a little bit inevitable for Austin. Josh Wolf was relieved of his duties as the manager of Austin FC following the loss in LA. So, Wolf, combined four-year record, 45 wins, 30 draws, 60 losses in MLS regular season matches. Of course, they had the magical second year, finishing second in the West, knocked out in the playoffs. But what a year that was, Sebastian Driussi in Dreamland. But Rodolfo Borrell has made the change, and now comes a big decision for Borrell, Doyle. First of all, what do you make of the timing and of Wolf's time in Austin, and where could we be headed as far as managers go for this this team in Texas?
I mean, the timing, it's weird with one game left to make the decision that felt inevitable since about May. Maybe it has something to do with season ticket renewals. You want to give those fans some sign that there is going to be a major change year over year and get them on board in that
and
way.
And I don't know about the timing of season tickets, but what they did say in the release is basically like that missing the playoffs two straight years was unacceptable, and this was the game that officially knocked Austin out of playoff contention. But I have a hard time believing that even had a miracle occurred and Austin ran this very difficult schedule that was in front of them, that this was the future that Rodolfo Borrell was planning around, was a future with Josh Wolf. It just didn't seem like that was going to be the case.
Yeah. What comes next? This team is headed for a rebuild. We've talked about Sebastian Driussi before. I know he had a goal this weekend. He is under contract next year for a very, very big number, the type of number that makes it unlikely, I think, that he's moved or bought out. They have some flexibility beyond that, but not a ton. So I don't know what they're going to be able to do in terms of remaking the overall team. In terms of what to expect from the new head coach, whoever that is, look, Rodolfo Borrell, they highlighted from the moment he was hired his Barcelona roots and DNA. Does that mean they go after Xavi, who's out of a job? I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. Domi Turan, who obviously has had some success in MLS, he is back in North America managing Atletico San Luis in Liga MX. Having some success there. I think he's got them fifth in the table. That is something that would be interesting. Beyond that, I don't really know. And let me actually correct myself. I'm looking at their salary table now. They will have a lot of flexibility next year because Alex Ring, they have an option on his contract. Matt Hedges, Hader Obrien, Johan Valencia, Diego Rubio, Ethan Finlay, like that's a lot of money potentially coming off the books.
Yeah, it's TAM and senior roster players for sure. Yeah. And they have basically no U22 players and just two designated players, Bukari and Driussi. So there is opportunity in those big time spin spots to go do something different.
Yeah. So, and they have, you know, if they're going to use a buyout, I think there's maybe some very obvious candidates for buyouts as well. So they potentially do have more flexibility than I originally thought. And it's Rodolfo Borrell's show now. It's been a slow burn since he was hired. I think there are a lot of people, me included, who were we were surprised to see Josh Wolf back this year. But he got plenty of time to try to prove that he could be the guy for the job. And you understand, given the record over the course of the 4 years, given the record at this point, why Borrell decided it's time to go in a different direction.
All right, we'll see what happens in the offseason with that one. I have not seen a press conference with Borrell, but I'm sure that's coming very, very soon. The only other thing we got on coaching is St. Louis folks who are having a great time. That final home game of the year was a brilliant one for St. Louis, saying, hey, under Hackworth, we're 6-3-3 with a match to go. Do you guys think he's done enough to earn the permanent job? And I have thought it's interesting that the two names most mentioned are Hackworth and Danny Cruz, who are extremely linked. I mean, Hackworth is the one that gave Cruz his start in coaching at Louisville City, if my memory serves correct.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yep.
Do you think Hack gets the job? He didn't want to talk about it last week.
Yeah, I don't know. I do know that there is internally sort of a desire to see them play less sort of high energy, direct Red Bull style soccer that was Bradley Carnell's calling card, and play a little bit more with the ball. And I think that that mandate has seeped into what we've seen from them under John Hackworth and with these new signings that they've made. And like, they went, I think, 6-for-6 or at least 5-for-6 on new signings this summer. They're like just a much more talented team and much better able to use the ball. And the results, you got to tip your cap to the players, but you got to tip your cap to the coach too. So I expect that. Well, I don't want to say expect. I wouldn't be surprised if John Hackworth were the permanent manager starting 2025.
Some question marks for teams out of the playoffs. Still some question marks to answer for teams fighting for their place in the playoffs. Two games this weekend and then decision day on October 19th. Doyle, I got a nap to take, my man. I'm still recovering. These old bones don't do it as well as they used to. Congratulations to Tommy Scoops on his big-time moment, his evening with Mrs. Scoops. They're off somewhere cavorting around Europe right now, and couldn't be happier for him. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll see you later on. Adios. We'll be right back.